Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the best gaming PCs on the planet. If you want all the benefits of building your own computer but have no clue where to start, go ahead and let our friends take care of you. Check them out at doghousesystems.com and use the code MMOREPORTER for a free 128GB solid-state drive upgrade. And by Audible, the best audiobook program in existence. If you have any kind of commute or just wish you read more, I promise you this, Audible is the solution. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOREPORTER to download a free audiobook today.
Hello and welcome to episode 97 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Andrew Brown, and this week, man, I got a special guest for you guys. I am joined by Dwayne, aka Mage of Death. You might know him from his Twitch stream and from around in the Hearthstone community, but man, I'm so excited to have you on the show today.
It is great to be here. Thank you for having me. I expect this is going to be a great show.
You know that when you get two brilliant minds in Hearthstone, well, I don't know that we're brilliant, but we know how to have a good time at least, right? I mean, that's really.
I was going to say, is there some other people showing up? Or I don't want to speak for you, but you know.
No. I'm totally with you, man. We're going to have a great time. So for our listeners who may not be as familiar with you, could you just give us a brief history of who you are, how you got into Hearthstone, streaming, all that jazz?
Sure. So, long time gamer, long time geek, even before it was cool to be a geek, I'm sure, like many of us.
You're a hipster geek, huh?
I wouldn't go that far.
I'm with you, man.
But, you know, got into Blizzard games with World of Warcraft. Some buddies were like, hey, come play World of Warcraft. And I started playing and got hooked on it like a lot of us did, and played for a very long time. But it was only last year, last March 2016, right before Whispers of the Old Gods came out, that I actually tried Hearthstone for the first time.
Okay.
Never played a card game before. I tried Magic a little bit. Some friends of mine are big Magic players, but it always seemed really complicated to me.
Okay.
And didn't seem very intuitive and all that. But Hearthstone definitely felt a lot easier to get into.
Sure.
And I've been trying to get better ever since. And, you know, last year at BlizzCon, we went, my wife and I went for our third year to BlizzCon.
Oh, wow.
Such
very
a
cool.
Great experience. If you ever get a chance to go to BlizzCon, it is absolutely fabulous experience. Not just the convention, but getting to see and meet so many wonderful people. It is
sure.
Just great. But yeah. I was talking with people I know that are in that play Warcraft or maybe just dabble with Hearthstone, and they're like, I like Hearthstone, but I don't really get how to play it, and I want to get better, but I don't really know how to get better. And so I kind of started streaming. I've wanted to get into podcasting or streaming or both. For a couple years, and I never really found something that I thought I was good enough at to be able to talk expertly about it.
Sure.
I still don't know if I actually am when it comes to Hearthstone, but
hey,
I'm doing
you know?
It at least. And I decided, well, why don't I try and get better at Hearthstone myself, but also try and help others learn the game or get better at the game as well. And so I really try and focus on, you know, the fundamentals of playing the card game and, you know, trying to be encouraging, try to explain what I'm doing as I'm doing it, all that sort of thing. And I've had some really good feedback from people that have watched the stream and felt like they've gotten better as a result. And I know I've gotten better as a player since I started.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a really cool community, I think, where that you've created on Twitch, where it's very accessible for anyone, no matter what level of play you're at or how hardcore you are at getting better or anything like that. It's a place where you can jump in, you can have fun, and definitely learn a thing or two in the process, right?
Yeah, definitely. It is. It's it's just great. And I would also tell you that the Hearthstone community as a whole is such a great community as well. And
sure.
There's, you know, I got to meet a lot of different people. This BlizzCon, I feel like I'm going to be even more kind of a part of the Hearthstone community. And so I'm really excited to meet even more people this year at BlizzCon. And
gosh.
I mean, the 1600 Dust guys, you guys, you know, the Dad Legend people. Oh, there's just so many wonderful people in this community that want to have everyone succeed and meet their goals. And so it's just been fantastic.
Absolutely. That's really cool. So going back a little, what kind of got you over the edge as far as like starting with a card game? I know you said you dabbled with Magic a little bit, but was it really that Hearthstone was kind of the Blizzard, you know, game that you hadn't tried yet? Or what was it that really got you in?
So there was, I distinctly remember they were doing a promotion for Heroes of the Storm, I think it was.
Okay.
I was big into Heroes of the Storm, and I wanted to get something for Heroes, but I had to play Hearthstone. I know there was the card pack, the card back mount. I know that's like if you win 100 games.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there was something else, I think, that was going on there about that time, and I don't remember what it was, but that's why I went and actually installed the game and started playing it.
So it was because of Heroes originally.
It was actually, I was playing Heroes. I wanted something in Heroes. You know, they do the cross promotion.
Right, right.
And, you know, it was one of those things where I tried that. Plus, they were doing a promotion, I think, to get some additional card packs just for trying out Hearthstone as well, kind of at the same time. And, I just got hooked. It was unlike Magic, it didn't seem as intimidating and there wasn't as many rules necessarily, or there wasn't as much going on. It felt like,
right.
Or maybe I was in a better position to, I guess, understand it. I don't know, but it seemed more intuitive than Magic did. And so I just started playing and then got really hooked and have invested a fair amount of money and an even more amount of time ever since.
Well, because your stream is it exclusively Hearthstone? I haven't seen you on there playing any other games.
Yes, So Hearthstone is the only game I stream right now. I've talked about possibly doing some other stuff if there would be interest in it, but really I've kind of promoted myself as being a Hearthstone streamer, and I mean that's the game I'm most interested in.
Right. Well, and certainly for a game that was sort of like, yeah, I guess I'll try this, or I probably should, or I, you know, whatever it was, like now it being kind of your whole, I mean, you're so invested in the community. I know you've been on, you know, another podcast or two also, and streaming a few nights a week. I mean, that's no small task, you know. So this game is your baby now.
It is definitely changed like my entire gaming life pretty much is that it is now focused almost entirely on that. And I still like Diablo. I still like Warcraft. I still like Heroes of the Storm. I like all the games, but it just, they all take a back seat to Hearthstone now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's totally fair, man. Well, hey, why don't you kick off our episode by telling us why you're happy this week in particular, or this moment in time, I suppose.
Okay.
Why is Dwayne happy?
Okay, well, I would say the first reason I'm happy is that we are, you know, less than 2 weeks away, actually, from a meetup. I'm going to the Convert to Raid Guild in World of Warcraft is having a in-person meetup in Minneapolis August 5th. And there are so many awesome people. I don't get to see, you know, we get to game with people a lot, you know, online and get to chat with them potentially online in Discord or whatnot, but it is an entirely different experience getting to be in person doing stuff with other people and
sure,
so
I'm
really looking forward to that. It's been kind of a few months since I've seen a lot of people that normally are that we see at these events. And it's a really good time, and it's the only thing between now and BlizzCon where I'm gonna get to probably do any kind of meet or gathering with regards to gaming. So
I'm really
looking forward to that. And the other thing is, you mm-hmm. know, we're now in the week of the, we're finally in the week of the reveals of the Knights of the Frozen Throne cards. I mean, that break between getting this awesome expansion announced and then having to wait for cards to be released, it's just,
oh, it's miserable.
Oh,
it's so miserable.
Oh my god, it's like, why don't you just put us back under the rock, or you know, don't right. don't give us that much time.
It seems like it shouldn't
be that long when you have when they announce and they're like, oh, it'll just be, you know, 10-12 days, but right. God, it feels like forever.
Yeah, it's I you know, at first it seems like it's, you know, okay, well, that's doable, I can make it there, but man, I, you know, I remember what it was like to have a daily daily, we would see, I don't know how many, like 3 to 5 cards or something like that on a good day. I mean, so I'm definitely right there with you, man. And the unfortunate thing is, you're listening to this, we actually recorded this right before they started revealing these. So they're out there, and you can go to hearthpwn.com, Hearthhead, whatever your weapon of choice is, and you can see them. And I'm sure that Dwayne and I are talking offline about how cool these cards are.
Yes. But
unfortunately, we can't talk about them here. Wicked Good and I will be back doing our full review episode here soon. So the time is coming. Hang tight. We'll be talking about it all on the podcast when all of them are revealed. So it's good stuff. Well, cool, man. Are you from the Minneapolis area? Can I ask that real quick?
I'm actually in North Dakota.
North Dakota. Okay. So
a little ways. A little ways. About 3.5 hour drive from Minneapolis.
Sure. It's not bad for a big meetup like that, though.
No, it is. It really is kind of the closest place there ever ends up being a meetup. We don't. If we've got a lot of Blizzard gamers in the Fargo or North Dakota area, they are closeted or something, and you don't know about them necessarily. So
gotcha. Okay.
We don't have our own meetups. We go to Minneapolis for those meetups and. Yeah. But it's still a lot of fun, and it's definitely worth the car ride.
Well, nice, man. I like it.
And I would tell you the last thing I'm really excited about.
Sure, yeah.
That I'm happy about is mm-hmm. my lovely wife, Eve. She goes by Eve. Everybody online mm-hmm. knows her as Eve. Bought me one of those really awesome Ice Cream Citadel t-shirts.
Oh, no way.
San Diego Comic-Con. And so hopefully in the next week or so, it'll be here, and I get to sport that thing. And I know we're going to talk about the Ice Cream Citadel during the news portion, but
we have to.
I was like, as soon as they showed the shirt, Ben Brode was like, here, if you go to San Diego Comic-Con, you can get this shirt. And it's like, mm-hmm. oh man, I'm not going to go to San Diego to Comic-Con just to try and get a shirt.
Right.
But I really want that shirt. So then he's like, oh, well, but you can order it online. Done.
Nice.
Done.
I can do that.
Yes. So what makes you happy this week, Andrew?
That's awesome. Yeah, for me, I have had a lot of good family time. My wife is actually a school counselor, so she's getting ready to go back to school this week. And so we've been really trying to just leverage the weekends and the weeks that we have to hang out together, be with our baby girl. She's just over a year now, so crazy how time flies. But so we've really nice. we've been having a blast, just really enjoying time together and remembering all the great things that there are here in Colorado to do. I mean, this is kind of a cool part of the country and the world, you know. So
I definitely want to visit there and get to do some things, because it does seem like a great part of the country to live and have just lots of things to do.
Yeah, it really is, man. I mean, I grew up in Texas, and I came out here for summer camp once a year. But other than that, I didn't really have any experience. And now I'm like, I wasted all this time in other parts of of the country, but that's okay. And actually, what's cool is that something's coming up, actually. So DreamHack Atlanta just happened. And I know a lot of my podcasting friends and a lot of you guys in the community were out there. It was really cool seeing all the pictures on Twitter and people meeting up and all that. And hearing you talk about BlizzCon and the Convert to Raid and stuff, man, that you know, that brings back all that stuff. The exciting thing is that DreamHack is actually coming to Denver later this year. And I think I finally confirmed, as far as I possibly can, that I'm going to be there. So I am I am really excited to sink my teeth in and get an experience, you know. So, yeah, so that's coming up. And I know I've talked with a few of you guys. If you're planning on coming out or you're thinking about it, hit me up on Twitter. Let me know. I'll definitely be organizing some kind of meetup for us and stuff, because you can't. You can't do something like that and not hang out. So we'll get some good time together and whatnot. But yeah, so I'm excited, because that is really not too far away, even at this point now. I think it's October that it's coming up. So
that is,
you can find all the details on their website and stuff. But that'll be my first gaming event, really, to be at, other than, you know, the Pokemon card tournaments I went to as a junior hire or something, you know, at my local comic shop.
Are you thinking about, are you going to compete in the event, or are you just...
You know, I am sort of on the line. I'm leaning towards not, mostly because I really just want to be present.
Right.
I think it would be fun. It would be extremely nerve-wracking.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, I would go in with not so much as a hope of really getting far at all, but I think it would be fun to I don't know when I'll ever have the experience to do it again, you know. So that's the one thing that I've been thinking. That's like, well,
right,
you know, when am I going to get a chance to go up against Green Sheep and Ant, you know, and, yeah, and stuff?
Some of those pictures of some of the people that you know, we talk to a lot on Twitter and Discord, and seeing them, you know, talking about going up against professional players and stuff, that does seem very intimidating. But at the same time, it's like, oh my God, that is so cool.
It's pretty cool. I mean, even if you know you don't have a chance, just being able to play against them, we've talked about it on the show before, you get better by playing against people who are better than you, you know? So, yeah. Definitely leaning towards no, but I don't know. Maybe I'll go crazy and we'll see what happens, you know?
I don't think it's a bad idea to have your first experience just be kind of a, I get to soak it in, sort of.
Yeah.
And don't have necessarily the obligations of needing to be, you know, playing games or having that extra stress level on it. Because there's just a lot of times with these kind of events, there's just so much going on. There, it's just kind of like sensory overload. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe if you've been to a couple of them, then maybe it wouldn't feel like quite so much coming in. And then, you know, maybe you'd be able to focus better on competing. But even if you do decide to compete, you know, that would be awesome too.
Yeah, there's so much to gain just from the experience, you know. And I think that's why I'm leaning that side, man. I just want to go and have some fun with, you know, people who are going to be there and stuff. So I think that'll probably be where I lean. But you mentioned it before that there's actually a lot to be excited about as far, and happy about, as it were, as far as like what's going on in Hearthstone. I mean, new expansion coming up is always exciting. I mean, you can smell it in the air, you know, people are getting ready for this thing. And, you know, especially during the summer, I think it's fun that they're doing all this, Ice Crown Citadel, Lich King stuff, cross promotion. Tell us about the Ice Cream Citadel thing that happened for those of us who may have missed it.
So this started with the, like, there was a teaser trailer last week or the week before, maybe early last week, I think it was, that they had they first had the Lich King being interviewed by Ben Brode, and he was told he needed more experience. So he apparently went out and bought an ice cream parlor
because he needed a job. So,
it seems like it's right up his alley, right? And, you know, you had these kind of bratty kids come in and see him, and as part of kind of the promotion, I suppose, of Hearthstone at San Diego Comic-Con this last weekend, they actually created the Ice Cream Citadel, a pop-up ice cream stand at the San Diego Comic-Con, which to me is absolutely crazy. I mean, it is just what... It is amazing to me some of the things that Blizzard does to promote their games or new expansions or different things like that. It just seems awesome. And so they had this free ice cream stand. You could get two flavors of ice cream, a villanilla, so and then a scourgeberry sorbet. And they also they worked with Yelp to create a Yelp page for this thing. And yeah. And then there was like special merchandise that they had available too, that you could buy for all the like the Blizzard games there. So, I mean, so much going on at the San Diego Comic-Con. I've never been there. It seems like an absolute blast between movies and video games and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to go, but if I was to go and then see something like this on top of that, it would just be amazing.
Oh my gosh. Well, and especially when there's something specific for the game that you're crazy about, you know. Right. I think any of us, you know, we've seen things that, you know, TV shows or movies will do to promote their stuff. It's just really cool to see Blizzard going above and beyond, and they've done this before, you know. I don't know that they've done it to this degree with Hearthstone necessarily. They had a cool like disco show when they announced Karazhan at like a Chinese tournament or something.
Right.
But I don't know that they've done something like this that was like available for everyone that was there, kind of. So really cool that they did that. Obviously the Frost Festival is the big thing. So last time we were talking about the Fire Festival, Ragnaros was taken over. Now I think if I'm pronouncing this right, Ahun? Ahun?
Yeah, I think that's right.
The Frost God, the God of Winter? Frost? I'm butchering this. I need somebody with some lore experience on here. But he's taken over now, and now it's the Frost Festival. So gone, unfortunately, are our double gold days. Wah, wah. We all love that. Thank you so much for that. But now the Frost Festival is going to bring a free arena run for you every week. So if you've logged in already this past week, you've probably gotten it. And the cool thing is you're actually already going to start out with one win in your bucket. So the worst you can do is 1-3. Which I guess that's a little bit better reward-wise. I don't know that it really matters, but...
And I mean, it's all free rewards, basically, because you didn't pay to the 150 gold normal entry fees, so...
Right.
It's all gravy.
Yeah, it really is. And they're giving that reward for playing three games. You'll get a Knights of the Frozen Throne pack when it's released. So very cool that they're doing that. I mean, again, it's just a bunch of free stuff that we don't deserve or need. It's really just goodwill that they're giving to us, which I'm really thankful for. And Mage, has this thrown you into Arena? Have you gotten gotten bitten by the bug, or did you just do your one run and you're done?
Well, I've had kind of a difficult month on the ladder. I don't know what has gone on, but I have not been able to... I haven't gotten to play as many games as I normally play in a month, so that's part of it. But I just... it's been difficult. And so I think I'm going to end up playing more arena runs in the next few weeks than I would normally. Normally, as part of the stream, I usually do a arena run every Friday night. At least one. If I do really badly, there might be a second arena run.
Sure.
You know, now that we're getting a free arena run, we're getting a bonus win when we play. It seems like a really good time to kind of just play the arena, especially if you're kind of we're at the kind of tail end of the expansion, and if you're kind of sick of the constructed meta right now, this is a great opportunity to try the other game mode, basically, that they have available. And so I did an arena run actually with Rod Johnston of the Tier 5 podcast on Friday.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
And but I've got, you know, an EU account that's got a free arena run as well, and so
there you go.
I've got to try and get some more in here this next week.
Yeah, you can't forget to log into your other accounts if you do that. And
yes.
Get the free arena run on each of them, because you never know what you get. You'll definitely get a pack.
I mean, and I, of course, you know, I'm in the process of saving all the packs that I get, so that, you know, once the no duplicate legendary patch goes into effect, that I can open all these packs.
Yeah, and honestly, if we have any listeners who aren't doing that, I'd really encourage you, if you can be disciplined, to hold on to your packs, because no one likes opening a duplicate legendary. And right now, there's a chance you will. Once Knights of the Frozen Throne is released, there is zero chance of getting that. So any of your packs will carry over, but they'll have that new added benefit. The big thing that's been encouraging me to do that is I'm pretty sure I'm missing one legendary from the classic set, and that's Illidan Stormrage. And while he's not the best necessarily, I still want him to complete my collection. Right. And so if I hold on to these classic packs, once Frozen Throne is out, then whenever I get a legendary next, it has to be Illidan, which I'm okay with that. And I'm pretty sure there's some hidden quest that you get like 1,000 gold or maybe it's 100 gold or something for a complete. Yeah,
if you get every classic card, I think you get you get something.
So it's like, come on, then I get a bonus pack. I got to do that.
It really is, that patch is such a great benefit for no matter what kind of player you are. If you're a free-to-play player, you don't necessarily have a lot of gold to invest in the game. So you're opening a small number of packs. You don't want to let a duplicate legendary. It's such a, you want to get those. And then if you've unfortunately done like I've done and spent a lot of money on it, you've got very few left that you don't have. And
want them all the much more.
Yeah, so like if the option is getting one, you know, you don't have, or 400 dust.
Come on.
Yeah, it's such a better deal to actually get the one that you don't have.
Absolutely. No, I'm right there with you, man. And because there's been all of this arena talk, you know, we're kind of in that weird in between where the expansion's not out yet and we can't really even talk about it because we haven't seen these new cards. What do you do with your time right now? Well, we want to encourage you to chill out with Arena. So it's been a long time since we've really dedicated an episode of the Happy Hearthstone to Arena. So I invited Dwayne to come on, hang out, and us share with you guys our Arena tips. So especially with a lot of you guys jumping in and probably shaking the dust off and, you know, trying to remember, okay, what do I need to draft as? Which classes are good? I forgot this card even exists, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we're just going to share things. Neither of us are an arena expert. You wouldn't call yourself that, would you?
No, so. Definitely. I would suggest I am very much a novice arena player. I went through and figured it out in Un'Goro. I played 21 arena runs in Un'Goro, and I'm averaging about 4.5 wins per arena run.
Okay.
So, but I have gotten my first 12 win arena run during this expansion. So
that's a really big deal. Congrats, man! I didn't realize it. I mean, if you've had 12 wins, that's an achievement.
Yes, I was pretty excited. It was actually we were celebrating reaching 100 followers on Twitch. And so I had a special kind of celebratory stream, and I was giving away a few items, a t-shirt and some different things. And I had a friend of mine on that never plays Arena, and he co-opted with me. And we had a paladin deck and we ran it, and we got 12.
Wow, that's pretty crazy, man. I had to check for myself. The best I've gotten is 10, which is still something to be proud of. But
10 is really good.
But that 12 win key, man, when you get that, I can't imagine the feeling of busting open everything.
It is definitely, it got a little nerve-wracking. Prior to that 12 win run, the most I'd gotten was 9. And so once you get up into that 9, 10, and then 11, I was like, oh, God.
Jeez. You're feeling the pressure, just like when you're almost a legend or to that ranked floor that you're trying to get to. Like, please let me win this game.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to bat around some of these tips, and hopefully You're going to find some stuff that's really helpful for you. I know for me, it's always helpful to even just talk about Arena with other guys. So as you're listening to this in your car or on your commute, your workout routine, I don't know when you're listening to this. Maybe you're hanging out at Starbucks. I hope that this conversation really spurs on some things that helps you get better at this. So we're going to kick it off with something that I was thinking about, because the most basic thing about Arena really is the classes, right? You got nine different classes here, and I think it's worth spending some time talking about what do you need to know about the classes. And we won't do a breakdown of every single one, but I think that it's kind of, especially if you don't play Arena as much, it's probably your bend when you jump in and you get your three choices there to say, which one of these is my favorite? Like, which class do I know the best? And I would actually encourage a bit of different thinking. That it's not necessarily which class are you most comfortable with, but which class really performs the best in Arena. This is something that they've dealt with pretty much since the inception of Arena, that there's some classes that are just much better than others. I mean, we're certainly not in the Warrior Arena Matters days, but Warrior is still very much struggling on the bus. And as opposed to him, I mean, who do you like to look to, Dwayne, for the classes that you think you feel like are best for you?
Well, there's a lot of really great resources out there that are collecting data on the Arena classes. You've got Hearth Arena and you've got the Lightforge guys, and the consensus basically is that Paladin, Mage, and Rogue are the three classes right now. Those are the most powerful. They've got the best cards are going to be offered when you have those classes. They have like the combination of removal plus minions plus, you know, AoE versus single target. They've just got really all the sort of things you need. And I think Mage and Paladin are a little bit easier to get into than Rogue.
I agree, yeah.
Rogue is a little bit tougher. You know, you've got Rogue has the extra combo feature that, while it's, you know, we're not talking about Miracle Rogue here in Constructed, but we are talking about cards that do kind of have to play off one another. And so things like the Vile Spine Slayer that you do need to combo in order to get the removal effect are a little bit more difficult to deal with. Whereas, you know, you've got Mage that has the hero power that really helps you control the board with that Fire Blast, the one damage ping, and you can use it on a minion or you can use it on the opponent's face. And then Paladin has the, no matter what, you can add a 1/1 minion to the board. And then from there, they've got all those buff cards that you can mess around with and really create a nightmare scenario.
Absolutely. I think it's really important, like something I was thinking about for Paladin. Like if you're ever playing against a Paladin in Arena specifically, you cannot let them have that 1/1 on the board if you can handle it, because there's so many buff things like Blessing of Kings or the Spike Ridge Steed now. I mean, there are some devastating things that can happen just from them having a little dinky 1/1 guy out there.
Dino size even.
Oh my gosh.
If you can't clear a 1/1, be ready for that to be dino sized on turn 8.
The 10/10. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That suddenly Silver Hand Recruit suddenly looks a lot tougher than at that point.
Yeah. It's pretty disgusting. And you know, Mage, like you said, has all the burn spells, Fireball, Firelands Portal. Even though that got cut down a little bit. Rogue, I think, is really the interesting one. If you're not like a tier one Rogue player all the time, I think it can kind of be a little bit surprising that it's so good. I mean, it doesn't take long looking at the cards that they offer to realize why it's so good, though. I mean, Backstab, Sap, Eviscerate, you know, those cards are just, they're basic or classic cards that have stood the test of time and can help you manipulate the board to your advantage.
Yeah, Perdition's Blade's another one that, as far as weapons go, they're a weapon class. Weapons just on their own, you think about how good they are in Constructed play, but in Arena, they really are just amazing as far as the amount of value you can get off of a weapon card.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's the one thing I think that's kept Warrior in the game, the fact that they have Fiery War Axe, you know. But unfortunately, one card can't make you a good arena card, so I hear. Now, something that I learned when you're drafting, and I know for a lot of us who probably don't play arena as much, it can feel like you're sort of shooting darts blindly a lot of times, like, well, I think this card's good, and this card's definitely good, and all these cards are terrible, but I guess I'll pick this one. You know, you can kind of feel like you're just sort of meandering your way. Something I learned early on, and I'm pretty sure that Trump is the one who came up with this concept, is he advised people, for the first 10 cards that you draft, just draft the best cards. Like, don't care about anything else, but, you know, if you can find the tier list on thelightforge.com, or any other source that you like, you just go purely by that tier list. So what are the best possible cards I can get? Let me just rank all three of these. And this one's the best. I'm picking it. And first 10, you don't even think about it. You just do those. The next 10, you start to see the deck that's kind of coming into its own. So if you see that you've got a lot of very low cost things, you could be heading for an aggro deck. If you got a lot of high cost, it could be more of a control-y deck. You're still going to pick based off of the tier list, more than likely, but you can sort of bend things a little bit towards how you see your deck playing out. If you just pick the best cards the entire way through, you might come up with a really good deck, but you also could have a lot of cards that really don't take advantage of one another. Because obviously, if you could make a full elemental deck, you know, you're probably going to do okay, right? Mm-hmm. There's the tricky thing of figuring out how much is just enough that I can pick this dragon card, you know, even though I don't have dragon cards yet. If this is my 10th pick in the deck, maybe I've got a good enough chance that I can find one. How do you handle picks like that when you're looking at the tribes and stuff like that, Dwayne?
I think that it's, I mean, a lot of the cards that have the synergies and stuff, I think you hopefully are going to get offered enough early that you can make a determination whether or not you actually have a deck that has synergies that you can take advantage of, elementals mm-hmm. being a good one. If you're playing, say, a shaman, and you're offered a fire elemental, and you're offered, you know, a tar creeper, and you're offered, you know, two or three elementals in those first 10 that you're talking about, then you might actually, you know, the Servant of Kalamos and some of those that require the elemental synergy, then start mm-hmm. looking a lot more appealing. Yeah, but if you're 10 cards in, you know, 10, 15 cards in, and you're getting, and you get the Servant of Kalamos, and you have, you know, zero or maybe only one elemental, you know, you probably need to start looking at what some of the other options are, even if that one is considered the best card on the tier list, because the odds mm-hmm. of you getting enough cards to get value out of that battle cry might be a bit difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a tricky tightrope to walk, sort of, and I think you learn best by doing, you know.
Yes,
it's kind of one of those things where we can talk theory and stuff, but there's always going to be a situation that trumps the theory, you know. There's always rules were made so that we can break them, right? Especially when you're talking about how to do something like this that is very nuanced, and there's not necessarily an absolute correct answer. Sometimes you just got to go with your gut and say, you know what, I see the value that another Spite Historian would bring. I'm just going to lean heavily on it. And worst thing I've got is a 2-mana 1/3, which could be a lot worse than that, right?
Right. Well, I mean, there are some basic things that we know about the offering rates in the arena. We know that there's
right.
that class cards are going to be offered more often than neutral cards. So mm-hmm. if you're trying to decide between a neutral card and a class card, the odds that you're going to get the class card again are better than the neutral card.
Right.
And so sometimes I will actually use that potentially if it's close and I'm trying to figure out, you know, whether or not I should take the card. The other thing is, you know, spells have a little bit better offering rate than I think, you know, I think class spells are actually have the highest offering rate of anything. in a draft.
Yeah.
So they made that change recently. Hence why Mage is so good, right? They've got so many really great Mage-specific spells. And so, you know, again, you kind of use that to kind of help determine what it is you want to go with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you've got some other great tips here, Dwayne. Why don't you share one of them with us here?
So, I mean, I think the first thing that you need to kind of remember is that since the switch from wild arena to a standard arena, and because of the increased rate in spells being offered, your opponent's going to have AoEs. And depending on the matchup, you're going to want to play out your hand differently. You know, you know that mages have Meteor and they have Blizzard, and so you want to make sure that from a positioning standpoint, starting on turn five, probably if they have the coin, or you know, even I guess turn four if they've used a Primordial Glyph, but that you know they have this AoE, that they could potentially have this AoE or Volcanic Potion. See if you can set it up so that your board doesn't get completely wiped out by a Volcanic Potion or a Blizzard or something like that. You know, you've got Paladins with Consecrate, you've got Priests with Dragonfire and Holy Nova, and you know, Shaman have Volcano, and frankly, I don't know if there's a really great way to play around Volcano necessarily, other than just
don't
having,
play your minions.
Yeah, just having more minions to put on the board after they Volcano.
Yeah, that's actually probably even better. Yes.
So, and the other thing is remember that the draft does not follow the same rules as constructed play. So you can have as many of these cards in their deck. Your opponents can have as many of these cards in their deck as they've drafted or as they were offered. Mm-hmm. I unfortunately did not play around a third Volcano with my Bitter Tide Hydra and got blown out of the water.
Yeah, that doesn't feel good.
Yeah. You know, and so it's just... You almost have to assume that they're going to have some AoE. You know, think about what options they might have available because of their class. And then, you know, even if they've already just used one, you know, still think about what that would do to your board if they used another one.
Mm. Yeah, you have to be thinking ahead. And the nice thing is that if you plan for it and they don't have it, then
you're in a great spot.
Yeah, you're in a great spot. But if you don't plan for it and they do have it, then you could have overextended and be just completely miserable. And I think that's a really good thing to hit on. I don't know if you guys have heard this term overextension, but it's used in Hearthstone, it's used in Heroes of the Storm, it's used in, you know, a bunch of competitive games. What it means is using more resources than you have to and getting severely punished for it, essentially. So in Heroes of the Storm, it would be when, you know, you've got that silly little hero that goes into enemy territory way too far when we're already ahead, and he just gets completely blown out of the water, right? But for us in Hearthstone, and specifically in Arena, if you have a ton of minions in your hand and you just lay all of them down and your opponent priest plays a Dragonfire Potion, that was something that you could have avoided. You didn't have to play all of your minions on board. Play what's necessary. Usually having around, I don't know, I usually see it as like two or three minions is pretty good. What do you say?
Yeah, I think, you know, once you start getting to four minions, then you know, mind control tech suddenly becomes a card.
Yeah,
because that card does show up. That card it definitely does. Sees play in Arena, and that can be a very swing sort of card. But yeah, I mean, you know, definitely three is probably, you know, three is a nice number. You know, when you think about things like Brawl, you think about things like the Volcano, you think about Dragonfire Potion, and that, you know, if you have three minions out and they have various attack, various health sort of situations with them, you know, hopefully you could take care of whatever they put down. But, you know, there are certain points where, you know, if you're about to die and you're doing this to try and put yourself in the position to either, you know, win the game if he doesn't have it, or you're going to lose otherwise, then obviously you go for it. But yeah, if you have the way of, you know, putting lethal damage on the board and still holding stuff back so that if they did have the big AoE, then you can refill the board the next turn and not hopefully lose too much from that AoE.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I think you just always have to anticipate, and you have to be okay when you call it wrong also. You know, it always feels bad when you think they may have had AoE, but you don't play around it, and then they end up do having it, and you hit yourself because you say, like, I knew that was there. Why didn't I do what was best? You know, it's always a risk with this game. You have to try and read your opponent. If they've played three volcanoes, I feel like it's okay to assume they don't have a fourth, but they could. You just never know.
I think it's obviously reasonable to play around one, and then you start thinking about it when it comes to the second and third, and it's just, I mean, they definitely could. And if there's a way that you can play around an AoE, definitely do what you can to do that. And you hope more often than not, you're going to be glad that you did, because they potentially, you know, when they do have it, it really feels bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to take some time to talk through some of the surprisingly good cards in Arena, because I think one of the biggest crutches that we can have when we're kind of trying it out or jumping back in is that we can assume that whatever's good and constructed is good in Arena. Mm-hmm. And that's fair and probably accurate to a point. But it's certainly not the complete story. In fact, there are a lot of cards that you would never see in Constructed that are actually incredibly useful in Arena. And maybe some cards that are just okay in Constructed you see every now and then that are just game changers. And I'm looking at the Lifeforge's tier list. Dwayne, do you know what the number one card, like the best card that you can possibly draft out of the neutral cards is?
I'll
tell you, it's a legendary.
Okay.
And actually the top three, actually out of the top six, five of them are legendaries.
Really? Okay. Well,
so if you hit any of those five, I would be impressed.
the common thing is they talk about the only way I'm going to lose is to Deathwing. So is it?
Yeah, you got it. That's number one.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. Yeah, I mean, it's so a board deep in clear your heart, and puts a 12-12 minion on the board. So I suppose
I heard that's pretty good.
That's what we refer to as a pretty big swing turn right there.
Now, can you explain to our listeners why discarding your hand may not be the worst thing in Arena?
Well,
because on surface level, that looks like a huge downside and probably why it's not played all the time in Constructed. But why is it not as big of a deal in Arena?
Well, the average deck quality of all the cards in the deck is going to be significantly lower than in Constructed play.
Right.
So there's probably at 10 mana when you could actually play Deathwing, the cards that you have used up until that point, you've probably used arguably your best cards to that point that you've gotten. And so the cards in your hand, one, you probably don't have too many of them because you've had at least nine turns before you played Deathwing. And secondly, they weren't necessarily your first choice to play them to this point. So, you know, there could be some situational cards or things like that that you have in your hand and that may not be useful in the situation. And so it's like, if I lose three cards, but I get to put a 12-12 on the board and get to remove every minion on my opponent's side of the board, including
especially if they have a ton of stuff.
Yeah, the upside of the 12-12 potentially hitting face and winning me the game far outweighs the discarding my hand.
Absolutely. No, I'm right there with you, man. And for those of you who are curious, the other legendaries are Yashiraj, Medivh the Guardian, Ysera, and Onyxia. I mean, the big thing with all of those cards is that they give you added value, right?
Yeah.
It's not just a huge minion on board, but they do something additional. Yashiraj is going to pull another minion with him every single turn. Ysera gives you a new card that's really powerful every turn. Nyxia fills the board. They're all good.
I really dislike Yashiraj in Arena. And the reason I say that is I don't have that card. And so I finally got to draft it in an arena and mm-hmm. got to play it. And when I played it, I went up against two priests and a mage, right?
Oh, no.
And it got mind controlled in all three of those games. Yes, that's right. I told you that third game was a mage. He got mind control from a Cabal courier.
Oh man, dude, that's the definition of feels bad.
That is the feelest bad sort of situation one can have when you have this like awesome legendary you're like hesitant to play it. That like the first time you played against priest, you're like, oh god, please don't have the mind control. Oh, he's got the mind control. Sure, of course. All right,
sure.
That happens. Second time, I was a little more gun shy about playing Yashiraj. Finally got in a position where I pretty much had to do it, mind control off the top.
That is,
and then the third, you're like,
think of anything
well,
worse.
It's a mage. They're not going to have mind control.
And they did.
Yes. But as far as like non-legendary cards, what are some of the ones maybe even from N'Goro that are listed highly that you wouldn't have necessarily thought of as being that highly rated?
It's really interesting because they kind of have them listed by tiers, and this great tier, which are the best cards, it's got those five legendaries and then the other three are all N'Goro cards, which you're more likely to get. And one of them, Primordial Drake, makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
It's a big minion. He's a dragon. AOE. Yeah, you can't go wrong with that. But the other two are probably ones that would kind of not be as intimidating. That's Giant Wasp and Stubborn Gastropod. Giant Wasp is a 3-mana 2/2 beast with stealth and poisonous. And Stubborn Gastropod is 2-mana 1/2 with taunt and poisonous. So these guys are little, but the big deal is this poisonous tag, right? Being able to remove something, you have to think about Arena as you're kind of trading cards through the entire game, right? So when you can get added value off of something that you play, that's really good. And I think where like poisonous minions like these really shine is when Giant Wasp trades with their, I'm trying to think of something big that they could have. I don't know. I said Illidan Stormrage earlier. Maybe that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hit taking out like the Frozen Crusher, a 6-mana 8/8.
Oh, yeah.
Or like a, you know, something like a really good like Boulder Fist Ogre or, mm-hmm. you know, something like a much bigger 5 or 6 drop that
really
they've
anything.
Played.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so much value. And the Wasp is, you know, with the stealth, you know, they're. And only being 3-mana, it seems like you can play it and then just kind of sit there for a turn or two potentially, and set it up. Or if it's later in the game, it works out fine because you know you maybe have a taunt that is already out there and it's sitting behind that as well. And so there needs to be a real specific AoE that's going to be able to clear it, or you know it's going to be. An AoE, there are some classes that not only need the AoE, but they need some sort of spell damage increase in order to remove the Giant Wasp.
Right. And it's, you know, we said play around it and you should be, but overall, I'd say there's probably a bit of a, well, there's lesser chance that they're going to have it in Arena than it is in Constructed, because it's a guarantee in Constructed with just about any deck that they've got something to deal with stuff like this. But in Arena, they may not have it. They may not have been able to draft it. It may be on the other side of their deck and they're not going to get it in time.
Yeah,
there's plenty of stuff that could go in your favor for these two little guys.
Yeah, it feels bad when you've set up a situation where you've got the Stubborn Gastropod on the board and that's the only thing sitting between your opponent's Frost Elemental and your face. And they have no way of removing it because they're... you know, they're a shaman or something and they've already used their jade claws or and they right. don't have an AoE or something.
They can't kill their frozen elemental themselves or their frost elemental themselves, but they can or frozen crusher, my goodness.
Yeah.
But they will let you kill it, right? So that's good stuff. You said something on here about curving out and how important that is. Talk to us about what you mean by that and why it's so important in Arena.
Well, even though the highest offering bonus is to class spells, the Arena has been and continues to be all about getting minions on the board, playing a minion mm-hmm. every turn, and having minions on the board gives you more control over the game. You know, you have more options to do on your turn between, you know, right. removing your opponent's player cards or going face or whatever. And so making sure that you have minions to play every turn is really important because it just presents more options and makes it more difficult for your opponent to maybe do what they want to do. And, you know, if it's a situation where they can't play their best card because their best card's going to get, you know, traded into or destroyed by one of your minions, it you know, that they're less likely to play it or something like that.
Sure.
The hero power is nice because you have that and you can always fall back on it. But at the same time, nothing beats putting a minion on the board. You're always going to get more stats for a minion that you put on the board than you are from a hero power. So you obviously want, you're going to be able to affect the game more by playing a minion. And so having a minion that you can play on turn one that then allows you to do more options than on turn two, or and then playing a minion on turn two and playing a minion on turn three, that it starts to create this snowball effect where you're the one in control and you get to determine the, you know, the best trades, or you get to determine, you know,
which is really what you want, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's so important. And it, you know, it, unlike say, you know, some of these, the mage, like the burn mage or the freeze mage right now in constructed, where you can actually win by basically just launching spells and not really having any minions on the board. You actually do need minions on the board because you aren't necessarily going to get two fireballs, two frost bolts and Alexstrasza, you know, all the pieces that you automatically can put in your deck and construct it. You're not going to necessarily have all those pieces in your arena deck.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think, you know, any time that you can, just like you said, be in control, you know, that's what you want. And if your opponent is in control, you have to figure out how to flip that. And a lot of times it's thinking strategically about how can I use the cards I have to my advantage. Maybe it's not something that's so obvious, like playing a five mana, five cost minion, you know, on turn five. Maybe there's some kind of cheating out that you need to do with, you know, playing a deadly shot and a kindly grandmother or something like that. And that's gonna give you the advantage.
Right.
But really thinking about how your cards fit into the overall structure of the game, you know, looking ahead to the next turn or two. I mean, that's constructed advice also, but mm-hmm. in Arena, it's just as applicable that you need to see how your cards are going to work themselves out as best as you can. You never know what your opponent's going to do to screw everything up.
Right.
But regardless, you can do the best job you can of looking at what you have and figuring stuff out from there. It's good, man. You mentioned something here about discover cards also. I think that's really worth kind of sending us out with. What do you have to say about that discover mechanic?
So discover cards, as good as they are in constructed, I think they're even better in Arena. If you end up looking at the Lightforge tier list and that, you'll see that discover cards are really powerful and it's because you get to pick which card you get, and you're basically adding a card to your deck during the game, and having that ability to determine because of the matchup, because of the situation, because of, you know, what the current or a potential future board state might look like, that being able to customize what that card is so, so powerful.
Oh yeah.
And yeah. What I think is, if you can, things like the Lotus Agent are really nice. You get a decent bodied minion, five attack, three health, and you discover a card. It is, mm-hmm. is a really good card. But even things like the Primordial Glyph, I know everyone likes that card just an absolute ton, but the using that card, it's a two mana card, but using that a little bit later in the game when you have more information about the matchup and what you might need is definitely, I think, in a lot of cases the better way to use that card, because mm-hmm. the more information you have about this game and what you're going to need to win that game, the better you can make an informed decision when you use that discover mechanic.
Mm. Absolutely. Now, what do you think about Explore Un'Goro's Discover mechanic? Because is that a game changer?
That is. So I was watching a friend of mine last night, and he was playing Warrior, and he did draft the Explore Un'Goro card. But
no way.
He never played it, and it is one of those things where, because of the cost of the spell, you have to pay for the discover, and then you get the card, and then you have to pay full value for whatever card you discover. It's not a good card in Arena. If you're just looking to have fun, if you don't really necessarily care about how many wins you get, I mm-hmm. think it has the potential of being quite interesting and potentially fun. I think I would rather play some constructed games with it, to be perfectly honest with
you. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, basically, if your whole deck was just trash, you got Angry Chickens and Ancient Watchers, then Explore Un'Goro, maybe you'll get something better. I don't know.
That might be the only situation where Explore Un'Goro might help you in the arena.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, man, this has been really good. Lots of material to really let settle in and dictate our future arena runs. If there's one thing that you would leave us with, that you would say, man, go out, my children, and get 12 win arena runs, what would you say?
So I would say the one thing is, when you're presented with the three options during the draft, first, evaluate them without even looking at the text on the card. Any of the battle cries, any of the death rattles, any of the special abilities they have. Because more mm-hmm. often than not, that's what you're going to end up playing. You can't necessarily know that you're going to get to use or get as much value out of the battle cry or the death rattle as you would in constructed play. So just evaluate the card based on the mana cost, the attack, and the health, and start there. And then, you know, if it's still really close and you're not really sure, then start looking at some of those other things to determine which direction you should go. And I'm going to add a second thing is, when in doubt, pick a curve card too. Making sure that you can curve out the two mana cards, the three mana cards, the four mana cards. You don't necessarily want to end up with a deck with a whole bunch of five, six, seven mana cards. Because you might end up, you'll be dead because you won't have anything to play those early turns. Your opponent will have some early cards to play, and he'll just run all those cards into your face.
And then you're going to have a bad time.
Yes, that leads to a bad time.
And nobody wants that.
No.
That's really good. You know, if I would, you know, echo what you're saying, and I guess give you guys something else to think about, definitely, you know, go on Twitch and watch people who are arena specialists, you know, watch Hafu, watch Lightforge, and watch guys like Mage of Death over here. You know, it's just helpful to listen to how someone else is thinking about it. You know, no matter how accurate they are to the best play possible or anything like that, just hearing what they're thinking about is going to challenge the way you think. And, you know, that's a little life lesson there for you, that challenging the way you think is the only way you're going to be able to grow. And I think that, you know, especially watching people who, you know, all they do is play Arena, man, you're going to get better.
Yeah.
You're going to get better from doing that. So spend some time just watching a run or two.
Yeah, I would agree that watching the Grinning Goat guys, the Lightforge guys, and Shady Bunny is another one. If you're outside the U.S., he does a really great job of explaining what he's doing as he's doing it. And those guys, when you get an opportunity to watch them and them talk about the Arena Hafu the same way, it really does help you kind of. There is a different mindset, and you mm-hmm. have to think about the cards and a little bit differently than you do in Constructed, and they can help you along that way.
That's really good. That's good stuff. Well, I hope it's helpful for you guys. You know, definitely let me know what you thought. What tips were helpful? What are some things that you've learned that maybe we missed out on talking about? I would love to retweet some of that stuff and just share it with the community. So send it to me at Andrew's Living, or you can email the show at thehappyhearthstone@gmail.com. No questions this week or iTunes reviews, wah wah, but would love it if you guys took some time. If you have not reviewed the show on iTunes, it would mean a ton. I actually talked with a listener who was trying to figure it out and couldn't quite get it together, and that was a bummer. I've got a blog that can walk you through the steps. So if you're not sure what to do, I would be happy to send that to you. Just shoot me an email, thehappyhearthstone@gmail.com. I've said it before, but I just have to say it every time because it's cheap. It's cheapest free. It takes 5 minutes of your time. So it's the cheapest, easiest way to really support the show. So if you enjoy this, if this is a part of your month that you look forward to, and you know, I can take you through the highways of life, or just the highways, you know, either way. Then just jump on there. Let me know what you think of the show, and that'll help other people find the show as well. Man, it's one of my favorite times in the show, Dwayne. You know what time it is?
Okay.
It's time for our card of the week, but we got to bring it in the right way, buddy. So I'd love to hear what you have to say, or perhaps
All right, so
serenade.
This is going to be a bit tortured. I apologize in advance.
That's the Happy Hearthstone way, my friend.
All right. The new dino in the neighborhood lives in my deck, and it's understood. He's there just to help me win the game. Like he's one of the family. Charge Devil Sore of our days and our nights. All right, I gotta stop.
Dude, that was great. I don't know what you're talking about, man. That was fantastic. We've actually had quite a few parodies going on, so that's good, man. Well, tell us about Charge Devil Sore. I know you were very strategic about choosing this for the Arena episode as well. So what is Charge Devil Sore?
All right, so the Charge Devil Sore, eight mana epic, 7/7, cannot charge the opponent, has to charge a minion. The turn it's played, it can't charge face. It is such a good card. You're playing a priest and they play a Draconid Operative, the 5/6 minion. That is a really mm-hmm. difficult card to remove. But the but the Charge Devil Sore, you just drop it down, boom. You got him. And you're left with the seven attack minions still on the board. And you know, there are classes that, you know, it's really easy to take out a one or two health guy, but at the same time, if you know, this is something that then needs to be dealt with, because if they don't, mm-hmm. that next turn they are going to have a seven attack minion that they can go face with,
right?
And so at the very least, it's like an assassinate. It's going to immediately remove an opponent's minion off the board. But it's got the upside of being the potential of being that removal plus a minion on the board that has to be dealt with immediately.
Which earlier when we were talking about how, you know, you're trading cards through an entire arena match, something like this is easily, you're taking care of two of their cards for your one card. If your opponent Shadow Word deaths your 7 attack, 2 health Devilsaur, you're totally fine with that because you took care of their operative and that Shadow Word death. They're down a card, as it were. So that's... Yeah, I think it's a fantastic card. It reminds me of Ice Howl. I think that we talked about that in the review, maybe. But it's a little bit better because it can... Ice Howl never could attack the hero. This guy, if he lives through that second turn, you're going to be able to be flexible with him. So I don't see him as overpowered by any stretch. And I think that this might be a sign of where charge mechanics are headed in the future. Just because this is a lot more fair. You don't have to be upset that they just charge you down for, you know, 7 attack on one turn and you couldn't help it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so the thing that might be a bit scary is the 8 mana piece to it. The fact that it costs 8 mana, but I think that, you know, having that guaranteed removal with the upside of it, having the potential to be a big attack minion on the board afterwards, it's so good. And actually, you know, this last weekend, the arena run that we did, we had the option to grab it. We ended up grabbing something else, and I really think that we would have been better off with the Devilsaur. So outside of like the Primordial Drake, the big 4/8 taunt with the AoE, I don't think that there's necessarily a better neutral epic card that you're going to be offered in this, you know, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, for sure. Do you remember what it was that you picked over this?
God, I we were worried about the mana cost, and because we already had an Eldric Horror in the deck.
Oh, okay.
And so the concern was we were going to end up, because it was early in the draft, and so I think we went with something a little bit lower costed. But I at the end of the day, I think you just take this card as, you know, you're going to have probably, you know, 5 or 6 really big cards, you know, 7 mana or higher by the time your draft ends. And I think this is one of those cards that you want to have as one of those 5 or 6 big minions at the end of your, at the end of the curve.
It's a good pick, man. It's good stuff. Well, we're going to go ahead and close down the show. Want to remind you guys that here at Happy Hearthstone, we're a proud part of the MMO Reporter Network, which is a collaboration of several different podcasts, all on mission to provide fun and entertaining takes on your favorite games. And if you play any MMOs like WoW, Lord of the Rings Online, or anything else, you got to go to MMOReporter.com and check out some of the other great podcasts. Chris and the team do a great job. In fact, there is a podcast called MMO Reporter. Whoa, that's crazy, right? It's not crazy. Anyway, but it's really good stuff. And if you love those games, you got to check it out. Also, if you'd like to support the Happy Hearthstone financially, help us grow and get better, I would love to have you as a Patreon over at patreon.com/MMOReporter. Some great prizes and stuff you can get, which is a good thing to do. And as always, I would personally love to hear what you thought about the show, what you liked, what you didn't like. Like I said, the arena tips I may have missed. I'll be looking for those and definitely will retweet anything that's sent my way out back out to the community. You can follow me on Twitter at @AndrewIsLiving or the show at @TheHappyHS. Also, our Google Plus community is massive. We got a ton of people on there who are just sharing deck lists and videos like crazy. So if you're looking for a community to be a part of and hang out with, definitely check that out. The link is in the show notes, which are at mmoreporter.com. Also, got to tell you guys that there are a few tips that Dwayne and I collaborated on that we didn't get around to on the episode, but I'm going to include them in the show notes here. So if you want to see what those were, be sure to go to mmoreporter.com and check them out. But Dwayne, I want to hear about where you're at, how I can check out your stream, what's going on over there. So tell us everything, man.
Sure. Thank you. So twitch.tv/mageadeath. So mage,
not mega death.
Yes. Not mega death. Mage as in like the class mage, death. That's actually the name of my World of Warcraft mage. And that's, so that's where that came from. That's how everybody kind of in the community first knew who I was. And so it just felt right to keep that way, even though I'm, you know, switching focus from Warcraft to Hearthstone. I stream every Monday, Wednesday, Friday evening at 8 p.m. Central Time. Nice. Friday evenings is usually an arena stream. I love doing co-op arenas. In fact, I think this week, Andrew, you're going to be on with me, right?
What?
Yeah.
I didn't. Oh, no, I did know that. I'm just playing. Yeah, I am going to be hanging out with Dwayne. Really excited. So we'll be able to put all these tips into action and actually see what we can come up with, huh?
Yes. Yeah, so we're otherwise Monday and Wednesday, we do some fun things. We do, I think tomorrow I'm actually going to do a challenge a friend. We're going to make wild decks and play against each other. I've got the challenge a friend quest. We're Wednesday. I'm actually doing a special, you were asking about streaming something other than Hearthstone. I'm actually doing a follower and subscriber game night, and we're playing Drawful or Quiplash. And so,
oh, dude, those games are so much fun.
I know, right? Those are going to be an absolute blast. But normally Monday and Wednesday, Wednesday we do the Tavern Brawl each week. Now we're going to be talking a little bit about the new cards that are coming out, and it's going to be an absolute blast. But yes, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, twitch.tv/Majadeath. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's at Majadeath there as well. I mostly, chat with Andrew and everybody else about the Hearthstone and post lots of pictures and that sort of thing. And, there's some other stuff there every once in a while too, but it's mainly Hearthstone related. So definitely would love if you guys came and checked out the stream or followed me on Twitter.
Absolutely. Go follow him. Go check him out. And definitely come hang out with the two of us on Friday night over at his stream. That'll be a blast, man. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm hoping we can at least get that 7 win. You know, yes. I like to break even on the arena. So
that sounds fantastic. I'd love that.
Oh, we'll play it on that, man. Well, hey, Dwayne, thank you so much for hanging out with us over here, man. It's been a blast chatting with you, and I feel like I've gotten a little bit better, so I'm kind of ready to get in the ringer there, man, and do some arena. But thanks for talking Hearthstone and hanging out with us here, man.
This has been so great. Thank you so much for having me. I've had an absolute blast.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. And hey, if you're listening right now and you'd like to be on the show like Dwayne was, feel free to email me, thehappyhearthstone@gmail.com. Love having our awesome community on this show. It just gets better that way. So email me. I'll give you all the details and we'll have a blast. But thanks again, Dwayne, for being here. And thank you for coming and visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you guys next time.
See you guys.